think what we've done tonight, I guess, Ben, you probably thought it out, but I didn't until I saw it tonight, which was really the vision for the future, building on, I think it's what the Million Artists Movement calls the power of the ancestral struggle. And you talked about the civil rights movement of the 30s and 40s being inspirational. But when we talk about the history of this country, we really have to go back both for truth self-telling's sake and for struggle's sake and for wisdom for the future's sake to the indigenous people. And so what better way to welcome our last speaker? And that is Dr. Chris Matonunpa. He is a Dakota elder, retired professor of Indigenous Nations and Dakota Studies from Southwest Minnesota State University. He is the chair of the Seven Fires Summit. And where is Chris? Because I wanted to also ask, I saw in your bio, is it true you're working on a book now? And I just have to say the name of it, because we're all going to want to read this book just for the name of this book, which is Sweet Selling Savor, Genocide, the Bible, and the Indigenous Peoples of the United States. Let's give a big hand to Dr. Chris Matonunpa.
In the language of the first Minnesotans, the Dakota people, this is a greeting which means, hello, my relatives. With a good heart, I greet all of you with a handshake. And as a Dakota person, I'd like to welcome all of you, especially those of you from out of this state, or not from the state, to our state, and to the ancient homelands of the Dakota people of Minnesota. Although we no longer have control, military control or economic control over our own homelands, we still feel and think that we are the spiritual owners of this land. And I, for one, will always think that until it's my time to leave this time and place and travel what we call the Wanahe Tachanku, the road of the spirits, which in our way is the Milky Way, and we go back to the stars from which we came. I'd like to make as part of this welcome, I'd like to make a few historical and cultural comments. Our ancient name for this area and the land we are on is Minnesota Makoche. My translation is land where the waters reflect the skies or heavens. A fellow Dakota, Dr. Charles Eastman, translates Minnesota Makoche as land of sky blue waters. And I know that some of you can remember the product that utilized that slogan, and probably consume great quantities of such product at various and sundry times. Anyway, both translations refer to the thousands upon thousands of lakes here in the north central region of the United States. Two other states have to do with the name Dakota, which is the name of my people, North Dakota and South Dakota. Two other states, Iowa and Nebraska, come from names that are in the Siouan linguistic family. The word for mini, or the word mini, is translated as water. And this is the word that's found in the name of the state, Minnesota. The M-I-N-N-E represents our mini, water. Also, mini is found in the name Minneapolis. And again, the M-I-N-N-E of, M-I-N-N-E of Minneapolis represents that, our word, Mini. So Minneapolis and the polis, I guess I should say that, is from the Greek. So Minneapolis literally is water city. But Chamber of Commerce style, it is city of lakes. In addition, the term Mini is found in Minnetonka, or Minnetonka, I think that's the way it's pronounced in English, a suburb west of Minneapolis. Tonka is taken from our word, Tonka, which means big or large or huge. So Minnetonka is large water or lake. Also, where the Minnesota River joins the Mississippi River, this is the site of Dakota Genesis, our site of origin. That, you know, some of our people teach us that we came from the stars, and that's where we made our appearance on the face of the earth, that where the Minnesota River meets the Mississippi. Also, we have a word called Bedote, and the early missionaries, they translated or spelled that word M-B-O-T-E, and Mendota comes from that word. There's literally dozens and dozens of names that are from the Dakota language. The first, Washichus. That's our word for white people. They came to Dakota homelands sometime in the early spring of 1660. Those two guys named Radisson, I can pronounce that one, and then the other name, I don't know how you pronounce that. The spelling is unfamiliar to me, so I never heard anybody pronounce it. So I'm going to pronounce it as Grossier. That sounds French, doesn't it? And in the early spring of 1660, when they came, that is, these white men, they had no land. But by 1900, 240 years later, they had all of our homelands. One more tidbit of history. Much of St. Paul and Minneapolis are located on 155,000 plus acres, which was involved in our first treaty with the United States government, the Treaty of 1805. And this land here, we're on this land, basically has not been paid for. And as a member of the First Minnesotans, the Dakota people of Minnesota, and as a Dakota elder, I welcome all of the representatives, social change agents, to the Third Democracy Convention. I hope much is shared, it looks like much has been shared tonight, and learned, which can be used to implement positive social change. Now, I had to write out what I wanted to say to make sure I stay within the time frame that was given to me. And I'm calling it a constant struggle, truth-telling, justice, and mutual respect. When Rodney King was badly beaten by racist white cops back in March 1991 in Los Angeles, and then the perpetrators were acquitted, I was so angry. I thought that it was open season on black males by the white racist cops. Apparently, it still is, quote, open season on black males. In fact, on black females as well. In any event, I wanted to do something. I had to do something. Then I read in the newspaper that there was going to be a march from North Minneapolis down to the federal court building. I thought, that's it. I am going to Minneapolis and march in solidarity with our black brothers and sisters. One of the chants we shouted out as we marched was, no justice, no peace. I liked that. Also, it was good to be with like-minded people, and it was good to support the black people. But more than that, to support fellow human beings who were victims of injustice. Because I think in general that most of the US Euro-American society thinks that dark-skinned peoples are not people or human beings. Or at the best, if we are humans, we are inferior beings. In the preliminary information provided to me during the Third Democracy Convention, there was a question by Bob, or quotation by Bob LaPollet, Ray Democracy. He said, democracy, quote, involves constant struggle in all sectors of life. I borrowed that phrase, constant struggle, for the title of my brief presentation. Also for myself, I added to justice the terms of truth-telling and mutual respect. There is constant struggle in dealing with these three terms. From my perspective, a Dakota perspective, and an indigenous perspective, there can be no peace without truth-telling justice, taking the form of economic justice, and thirdly, mutual respect. Thus, in my brief presentation, I would like to make a few comments about truth-telling, justice, and mutual respect. And again, to reiterate, to me, without these three factors, there can be no peace, no forgiveness, no reconciliation, and no healing. Truth-telling. Golda Meir, a former prime minister of Israel, said this about the trial of Adolf Eichmann in Jerusalem in the year 1961, that the trial was, quote, was not in any sense a question of revenge, but those who remained alive and generations still unborn deserve, if nothing else, that the world know in all its dreadful detail what was done to the Jews of Europe and by whom, unquote. When I read this statement, I resonated with it. I shared this sentiment. So as a Dakota man, as an Ikjewi Chashka, a common man, a man of the earth, a natural man, I paraphrase Meir's statement by saying this, quote, it is not a question of revenge, rather it is a question of truth-telling, justice, and mutual respect. Those Dakota women and men who are descendants of the survivors of the genocide of the Dakota people of Minnesota in the 1860s and the generations still unborn deserve, if nothing else, that the world know in all its dreadful detail what was done to the Dakota people of Minnesota and who did it. Mm-hmm. The same sentiment could be said in regard to the genocide of the indigenous peoples of the United States and also the genocide of the indigenous peoples of the Americas. Estimates run anywhere from 110 million to 125 million native people slaughtered by Western Europeans in general. In my retirement years, I'm working in these three main areas, truth-telling, justice, and mutual respect. Also, I should say, I am 77, quote, winters, unquote. One winter, or the Dakota year, begins with spring, with the emergence of new life, then summer, fall, and finally winter, thus completing one cycle, or 1 year, or as the Dakota say, one winter. So like for me, I would say, wana wania tu ikchemina shakpe sam shakpe hemacha. I am now 77 winters. That's how we count the years. I, engaging in truth-telling, am attempting to do so fearlessly. The truth is not being told or taught about what happened to the indigenous peoples of the United States and who did it. The truth is not being taught or told about what happened to the Dakota people of Minnesota and who did it. The truth about this part of history in regard to the indigenous peoples of the US is in general deliberately and willfully being suppressed in the public and private schools and in the colleges and universities of not only in Minnesota, but also in the United States. What are some of the truths that I would like to see taught in the educational system? One truth is the massive land theft of 3 billion acres of land which comprise the continental United States. The perpetrators of this land theft are the United States and its Euro-American citizenry. Also, most of these lands basically are not paid for. And when there has been actual money involved, it was a pittance. For my people, the Dakota, re the treaties of 1851 involving approximately 24 million acres of land in southern Minnesota, we received a pittance, not fair market value for the land. And furthermore, the pittance was given to us a century later in the mid-20th century. How many of you would like to sell something and then get paid a century later? We are on stolen land tonight, right here, University of Minnesota. Basically, not paid for. The land we are on is land involved in the Treaty of 1805, about 155,000 acres. Much of St. Paul and Minneapolis are on this land. Secondly, treaties. I would like to see the truth, Ray, treaties taught. Approximately 400 plus treaties were made and violated by the United States government and its Euro-American citizenry. Vine DeLoria Jr., in his Custer Died for Your Sins, says, quote, "It would take Russia another century to make and break as many treaties as the United States has already violated," unquote. Treaties are the supreme law of the land, according to Article 6 of the white man's sacred document, the U.S. Constitution. I think I heard the U.S. that term, U.S. Constitution, mentioned tonight.
A little bit.
However, then you can work on that one anyway. Treaties are the supreme law of the land. However, this didn't seem to be a factor in the behavior of the United States. DeLoria writes, quote, "In looking back at the centuries of broken treaties, it is clear that the United States never intended to keep any of its promises," unquote. The third topic that I would like to see taught is the genocide of not only the Dakota people of Minnesota, but also of the native peoples of the United States and of the indigenous peoples of the Americas. The native population at time of contact for the continental United States was about 16 million people. Some modern demographers use higher estimate numbers for the indigenous population, some in the 20 millions, but I use 16 million. Four centuries later, in 1900, there were 537,000 plus First Nations peoples alive, according to the U.S. Bureau of Census. 16 million people were murdered by violence, disease, and despair. The perpetrators were the United States government and its Euro-American citizenry. David Standard, in his book, American Holocaust, writes, quote, "The destruction of the Indians of the Americas was far and away the most massive act of genocide in the history of the world." This is, to me, a really significant statement, so I'm going to read it again. "The destruction of the Indians of the Americas was far and away the most massive act of genocide in the history of the world." Yet what are we all taught? And then other things, if there were more time and space that could be mentioned, these things would be mentioned, such as the suppression and prohibition of our religious ceremonies and spirituality, the suppression and prohibition of our native languages, concentration camps. We had two here in Minnesota, one at Fort Snelling for 1,700 women, children, and elders, and then one for the men at Mankato. And I might like to say this too. Hitler would say often to his inner circle how much he admired the efficiency of the U.S. genocidal programs against the native peoples of the U.S. He admired the efficiency. So he learned much. And he mentions in the concentration camps that he learned from the United States. The United States was a good teacher, and Hitler was an excellent student. Forced marches, mass execution, the hanging of 38 Dakota people at Mankato, Minnesota on December 26, 1862. The good Christian white folk were celebrating the birth of their Lord and Savior Jesus Christ on the day before, and the next day they were celebrating the death of 38 Dakota people in that largest mass execution. Then bounties. There were bounties on my people. In fact, there were bounties on almost every state, colony, and territory. There were bounties on indigenous peoples. To me, this is one of the most heinous and barbaric acts one group can do to another. So like for me, when I hear the United States talking about exercising moral leadership in the world, right, or being champions of freedom and human rights, I tend to think in my mind, that's Dakota, and in English it means bovine excrement. And I would say also that bounties are definitely not Minnesota nice. I like this one black activist, I can't remember, maybe some of you might know, here in Minneapolis, who said, Minnesota nice ain't for black people. And I say the same thing, Minnesota nice ain't for Dakota people. Then there were forcible removals, ethnic cleansings. A lot of these were authorized by the state legislature of Minnesota. Bounties were, and these forcible removals. Our people were forcibly removed on May 4th in 1863 from our own homelands. To me, the United States is not too much better than some of the countries that it criticizes. Residential boarding schools. We don't have much time. We spend semesters on some of these issues, operated by both the state and the church. And the purpose of these schools was, as one white person put it, kill the Indian, but save the man. And other assorted crimes against humanity were perpetrated by the United States against the First Nations people of the U.S. And I want to say here, we need help in getting these inconvenient truths incorporated in the curriculums of the public and private schools and in the colleges and universities. We need help in effecting social and educational change. The second major area that I would like to work in is justice and taking the form of economic justice. And what do I mean? Just a couple things here. One, I would like to see reparations for the stolen lands. For the 54 million acres of land that comprise Minnesota, and for the 3 billion acres on which the United States rests. Secondly, there ought to be reparations for the genocide perpetrated on the indigenous peoples. Third, it would be nice if some back rent could be paid to the Dakota people by the cities of St. Paul and Minneapolis. $198,000 plus interest from 1805. Fourthly, I would like to see land restitution, that is, public lands, not individual private property, returned to the Dakota people of Minnesota. The public lands would be state lands, federal lands, county lands, municipal lands. And then the last major area that I am working on, as long as I've got some health and can physically move about, is mutual respect. Working and calling for mutual respect. Over the 525 years that the Washichu, the Dakota word for white man, has been here in the Americas, the colonizer has shown that Native peoples have no rights that the white man needs to respect. The white man has shown that he has no respect for our land rights, for our religious rights and ceremonies, for our customs and traditions. For no respect for our place names, no respect for our women, except as sex objects. And Sibley is a good example of that. And no respect for our very lives. A good example, current contemporary example of this is the struggle of the Dakota, Lakota people to protect Miniwichoni, water of life, against DAPL, the Dakota Access Pipeline. And against the brutal government and corporate response. That hits home for me because one of my younger daughter was arrested and strip searched and stripped down to nakedness and then thrown in a dog kennel-like cell and kept for 3 days, and the husband, my son-in-law, didn't know where she was, but he finally did find out and was able to get out. And then just recently now, the charges were dismissed. Over the 525 years, we indigenous peoples have been called many derogatory and demeaning names, such as wild, savage, uncivilized, children of the devil, and subhuman, etc. In addition, we have been called various kinds of animal names, such as beasts, swine, dogs, wolves, snakes, pigs, baboons, gorillas, and orangutans. And you can find some, if you're somebody who's interested in this, I can provide the documentation for you, to cite only a few of the commonly used dehumanizing characterizations of Native peoples. I know that what I am calling for in regard to truth-telling, justice, and mutual respect are impossible dreams. I am like Don Quixote tilting with windmills. I think that the most impossible dream of the three impossible dreams which I have is that of achieving mutual respect. Why do I say that? Seems like that would be one of the easier ones. I think, and this is my perception, my Ponumpa's perception, that based on my 77 years on Inamaka, Mother Earth, I think the attitude of white supremacy is deeply and firmly embedded not only in the U.S. Euro-American psyche, but also indelibly etched in the psyche of the Euro-Minnesotans. Thus, it is next to impossible for the white man to regard the Native peoples, and probably I can say that about the other peoples of color as well, as equal human beings worthy of being accorded respect. I call what has happened to the indigenous peoples since the white man has come Woshicha Tunkaki. I changed the title, by the way. Woshicha Tunkaki, the great evil, genocide, the Bible, and the indigenous peoples of the United States. The great evil consists of some of these things that I've mentioned, like the genocide, the massive land theft, and the land not being paid for, the broken treaties, the suppression of our languages and of our religions, and numerous other injustices. The great evil began 525 years ago. However, In spite of these tragic, traumatic, and genocidal events, for me to say and do nothing is not acceptable. As long as I can physically move, can write, and can speak, I will continue to engage in these complex and difficult issues of truth-telling, justice, and of mutual respect. To reiterate, these activities involve, quote, constant struggle, unquote. I see Cam Gordon over there. Back in 2012, the 150th anniversary of the Dakota-U.S. War of 1862 and 63, I wrote a resolution titled, The Year of the Dakota, Remembering, Honoring, and Truth-Telling. Cam Gordon, as a member of the Minneapolis City Council, helped get it before the City Council, and the City Council passed it. Shortly thereafter, the St. Paul City Council also passed the resolution. I guess they didn't want to be outdone by their sister city, Minneapolis. I will always remember what Cam Gordon did and will always be grateful to him. Cam Gordon also said publicly that Coldwater Spring, a sacred site, not only to the Dakota people, but also to other indigenous peoples, ought to be returned to the Dakota people. This thing, some of these things, I could not have done this by myself. I needed allies and supporters, and Cam was there. It took me a long time to learn that I need upstanders as opposed to bystanders to help me. I need white folk and other allies and supporters, both indigenous and non-indigenous, both Dakota and non-Dakota, who are informed, courageous, and passionate. Especially do I need white people to talk to their fellow white people since they are in control right now. If Dakota / indigenous issues and causes like land rights and reparations like human rights, etc., are to be addressed and advanced. If there are white people who wish to help with Dakota / native issues and causes, then it appears to me that those kinds of people are right here in this convention. If there are people with a good heart and goodwill, then together we can work to address what I call the great evil. We can work together to honor and protect Inamaka, Mother Earth, to honor and protect Miniwichoni, Water of Life, to honor and protect our children, to honor and protect our women, to honor and protect our elders, and to honor and protect our animal relatives, the birds, the fish, the rocks, and all other life forms, to affect positive social change and to make a better society for all. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Chris. That was absolutely beautiful. And Chris and Steph, can you come back up here? Because I think this evening has been really special. And I would like to bring up everybody who was involved, the singers. We have Pat and Sandy, our Million Artists Movement. The Gar, please come up here, and our organizers, without whom we wouldn't do it, and our elected official. When do you ever get an elected official who stays for the whole evening? So please come forward, all of you. Can we bring you all over here? Yeah. Somebody take a picture of this lovely gathering. Let's all come up here. We have you come up here closer. Yeah, I'm going to get in here too. I'm short. And I think maybe because, Chris, you like the no justice, no peace, we ought to do a little chanting. And perhaps because Not everybody knows that the beautiful Minnesota, Minneapolis, is also known for its, unfortunately, racist police. Let's do the no justice, no peace, no racist police.
Sure.
Okay? Who's good at chanting here?
We all are.
All right.
All right.
All right.
No justice,
no peace,
no racist police.
Okay, all right, all right, all right. Just we don't say prosecute the police anymore because we tried that, it didn't work.
Okay.
No justice,
no peace,
no racist
police.
No justice,
no peace,
no racist
police.
No justice,
no peace,
no racist
police.
No justice,
no peace.
No racist
police,
no justice,
no peace,
no racist
police,
no justice,
no peace,
no racist,
no peace,
no justice.
All right. All right, now I think I'll put them on the spot, but we always got to end up on a positive note here. And we've got the most positive note to end on,
yeah,
which is Pat and Sandy Emma's Revolution.
Peace.
I'll be the mic stand.
This is your part. You just hold it right here.
Right.
Here's your part.
Peace, shalom, shalom. Peace, shalom, shalom. Peace, shalom, shalom. Peace, shalom, shalom.
Peace,
shalom, shalom. Peace, shalom, shalom.
Thank you.